All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of our podcast. This week we had a little bit of technical difficulties. Well, actually, I should say 3 weeks ago we had a couple of technical difficulties. And we actually did film this right before Christmas, so you will hear reference at the end to us wishing you all a Merry Christmas. I'm still wishing you a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, whatever, you know, whatever you celebrate. Yeah. But it's just a bit late now.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's now 2021. We got a new year, a new outlook, new chances to celebrate. I feel like maybe we're just preemptively wishing happy holidays for whatever next holiday comes up.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, technically, we could wish a happy holidays whenever we want.
Yeah. There's no saying that we like don't wish you a happy holidays until December, then we suddenly have a change of heart.
Yeah, exactly. Screw all of you. I do not wish you a Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays.
Until December 1st, your holidays can suck.
All right. Enough foolishness. Let's get down to it. So,
yeah, so Quincy, what is our topic from 3 weeks ago?
Our topic is on aquaculture. And so this is a topic that is super, super important to me because I live in New Brunswick, which is, it has a huge fishing industry. My grandfather was a fisherman. So it's a topic that I've kind of always been around, but never actually heard a lot about. And it wasn't until I took a class at UMB on aquaculture specifically that I realized the full scope of what aquaculture is.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, the episode's going to be really cool. but I must say, before we talked about it, the only thing I knew about aquaculture was that fish made me uncomfortable and water means aqua, or aqua means water. And that was about it.
No, actually, you did pretty well. You pretty much guessed the first definition I gave you, which is actually where this episode picks up, like in our recording. So.
Ooh.
Yeah, you were able to figure out that there were two like main types and it was freshwater and saltwater, but there was just a lot of variations after that.
Oh, it's going to be cool. You guys are in for such a treat.
Yeah, you're going to love it. So let's, without further ado, let's head into the episode. Canadian Department of Fisheries and Oceans definition of aquaculture. Aquaculture is the farming of fish, shellfish, and aquatic plants in fresh or salt water. So there you go, Elsa, you were right.
Oh!
In Canada, aquaculture was first used to enhance natural stocks. It is now a large-scale commercial industry across the country. It provides direct and indirect economic benefits to many local and regional economies. Basically, yeah, the history of it is we were overfishing in our oceans and we were really worried about, you know, what was going to happen to them. So we decided, hey, why don't we supplement some of the wild stock with some that we grow ourselves? And then hopefully the wild stock will be able to recover and then we can do away with all of this because it's more work. It's a bit more expensive than just going out on a boat and fishing. Yeah, so that's kind of where it came from.
I'm guessing... Yeah, we haven't thrown it out the window, right? Like it's just grown.
Yeah, it's growing mainly because people are learning how to do it in really kind of bizarre places. It's freshwater and saltwater, so we're able to grow, you know, we're able to produce huge quantities of fish on land, which is really cool. So you don't have to go out in a boat to find these big groups of fish. You're just growing them wherever you are. So there's a bunch of bonuses like that. And then there's some, you know, negatives to it. It's like, well, there's all of this extra sewage, basically excrement that is coming from these big groups of fish. And where's that going? And
yeah, because in like the ocean and stuff that it like, it's a very small percentage of what makes up the chemical composition of the ocean. But if you only have like a little pool, that's going to fill up pretty fast. Mm-hmm. With grossness.
Yeah, exactly.
And scientific term.
We're doing it in coastal waters. We're not going out to the middle of the ocean. Now, that is something that I'm not really going to get into today, but it's the coolest thing in the world. And I highly recommend you check out the YouTube videos on it. But they're basically these giant spherical cages in the deep ocean filled with fish. Super cool.
Oh my God, that is cool.
Yeah, it's really
and
cool.
I don't like fish.
Okay, so I'm going to give you some stats on how Canada kind of uses it right now. And these are all from the Government of Canada website, from the Fisheries and Oceans Department, just so everyone knows.
Canadian stats.
Canadian stats. Here we go.
I feel like we need like a separate jingle just for that.
Totally.
Yeah, just every episode. Time for our Canada stats. Or something.
Can we actually, it's called a sting. Can we make a sting for Canada stats?
Oh, we should make a sting. I mean, Canadian stats deserve one, right?
Yeah, totally. Agreed. Okay, so.
Okay, hit me with them.
In Canada, it represents a third of our fisheries value. So that's crazy. Like a third of our fisheries value is from aquaculture.
That is crazy.
Yeah. It's 20% of the total production. So it's more expensive, but it's 20% of our total production of fish being grown. And that number has grown by 63% in the last 10 years.
Oh my God. Okay. So booming industry.
Yeah. It's rapidly becoming a really important industry in Canada. And in 2013, it was a $962 million industry.
Oh my God.
I know, it's huge. It's way bigger than most people realize.
Yeah, I must admit, I do not spare two thoughts for fish in my everyday life, except to be uncomfortable by them. I do not like fish. I don't like their little slimy bodies or their weird little pokey eyes. No.
As far as employment, it employs 14,000 Canadians full-time. And these jobs are usually in rural coastal communities, so they really help those areas thrive and stay alive. So then in the USA, because I figured I should give a couple USA stats just in case. So in the States, it's a $1.5 billion industry producing 626 million pounds of production, but they're still considered a relatively minor producer in aquaculture compared to other countries in the world.
Do you know, like, where is it the biggest?
Yeah, it's actually in Asian countries, and it's not even so much in fish, it's more so in seaweed.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a huge, seaweed is a huge, huge industry for aquaculture, not just for like sushi wrap and stuff, but it's also used like in ice cream as a thickening agent in different compounds. Like it's all over the place. There's tons of uses for selling seaweed.
That's super cool.
I know. Yeah. Globally, it employs 20.53 million people.
Okay. So significant chunk of the earth.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, so 2018 numbers compiled by the FAO, they found 114.5 trillion pounds of aquaculture production that year with a value of $263.6 billion.
Crazy.
Yeah. I know. It is crazy. And so fisheries, so this is my favorite part though. So we had a 114.5 trillion pounds of aquaculture production, and fishery productions that year, so actually going out and catching wild stock, was 96.4 million pounds. So we have made the switch. More fish are coming from aquaculture than are coming from our oceans.
So yeah, okay, so we're moving from fishermen to like farmers, but water farmers.
Yeah, it's becoming more sustainable. Our population has grown too quickly to keep taking from the oceans as we had been. And really, we're still taking from the oceans too much. Like this is a solution to a huge problem, yet we still haven't quite hit the mark on making it environmentally friendly.
I knew there was going to be a drawback here somewhere.
I know. I was being so positive. And I was like, but we got to get down to it.
Yeah. I was like, all right, there's no miracle solutions. What's the trade-off?
I know. Society's never done something right. Like,
there are no faultless acts. Yeah,
So what I want to do is I want to explain to you some of the very general types of aquaculture so that we can all understand them a little more. And then we can talk about the pros and cons of the different systems as we get to them.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about the basic idea of aquaculture first. So a stock. So when I say stock, that means like the fish population, whatever type of fish you're talking about, whatever area you're talking about, that is called your stock. So a wild stock is the ones found in the ocean just out there. And then, you know, the farmed stock is the ones that we have in pens or enclosures or whatever it may be. And so the first stage, I guess, that you need to know in the whole process is that a farmed stock comes from a hatchery. Otherwise, if we're just taking wild stock from the ocean and like taking the eggs from the ocean, it's not actually sustainable, because that way we're still taking stuff that naturally belongs in the ocean and then using it to eat it. So yeah. Hatcheries are the true first step of this whole situation. And it's really, really cool, because basically the limiting life stage of a fish. So the stage that is the hardest for a fish to survive, which we were kind of talking about in evolution last time, it's their embryonic stage. Yeah. They're so vulnerable. Yeah, it's a very vulnerable time for the fish.
So barracuda in Finding Nemo.
Exactly. Barracuda in Finding Nemo. That is always the greatest cause of fish mortality.
No, I'm just saying, all of Nemo's siblings got eaten by a barracuda when they were in their embryonic stage.
Yeah, okay, so predators, yes, predators are one of the problems. other problems are just, like, they're little vulnerable little beads. Like, they get thrown around in the water too much. They get dislocated from the rest of their group. Like, they just die really easily. So what hatcheries have figured out is how to create the perfect conditions to actually really increase the survival rate of the embryonic stage. In one study of salmonids, so salmon babies, basically salmonids is what it's called, but so it's Rice and Bickler. I don't know if I'm saying that name, from 2004. So they saw an 85 to 95% survival in the hatcheries versus 1 to 5% survival in the wild.
Yeah. Well, and that really is one of those things in the wild and stuff like that, like when we were talking about evolution in the last episode, where it's like that's the environment selecting different like animals to survive and prosper. It's things like that. It's because in the wild, a lot more animals die. And so those that survive have the traits that like let them continue. Yeah. So in the hatcheries, we try to keep all the fish alive is what's happening. So we probably have like, I wonder what this does to speciation. I mean, that's a different episode, but I'm interested.
Well, yeah, it is interesting. And I actually do have a little bit on that slightly, but we'll get there when we get there.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll hold my horse.
You're ruining the moment, Elsa.
I'll flip back. I'll stop looking ahead, Quincy.
Okay, the problem with the hatcheries is that fish, you know, after they've left that stage, they now need a new type of environment. In the wild, you know, if they survive the embryonic stage, they're now in the environment that suits them best, because that environment wasn't what was best for the egg, and that's why so many of them die. But then they are born, and now they're in a place where they prosper. Generally, typically, hatcheries don't also see the fish grow into the next stage, because it would have to be a huge, huge organization with a bunch of moving parts. And it's just easier to have the right conditions in a smaller kind of situation and then sell the baby fish to other, like juvenile fish is what it's called, but to sell them to another company that is more equipped to handle them at a larger stage of life.
Oh, okay. So all companies are just very specialized in like the age of the fish that they can grow. So so throughout a fish's lifespan, they get like traded off at each kind of stage of development to a new company?
Yeah, exactly. It's generally, there's generally just two stages basically. So there's the hatchery, which takes the embryonic form. Mm-hmm. And then once they become juvenile fish, they get sold to someone who is going to grow them and fatten them for the market.
Oh, okay. All right. So they probably need more space to grow, right? Like going from eggs to actual fish.
Yeah, exactly. So one problem though that we're seeing from this, which is kind of goes to what you were saying earlier, is that the fish that survive best in the hatchery or survive best in these farms aren't the same fish that survive best in the wild. So what we're seeing is that sometimes fish are escaping from the farms, you know, you can't keep track of them all, and they're going and they're breeding in wild breeding grounds. And so their genetics are getting mixed in with the wild population.
And they don't necessarily have the right traits to prosper in that wild environment. This is, okay, I'm in. I'm on the edge of my seat here.
I know, I figured you'd like that.
I do like that. I'm like, what is it doing to the natural populations?
Yeah, so this is one of the negative effects we're seeing, and it's something that is really, really hard to control because, you know, they're in the water. We're not as quick a swimmer as them. We can't catch up and, like, bring them back. And so they go and they're breeding and their genetics are getting passed on. And there's a lot of vulnerable fish species out there. The Atlantic salmon to be one, we're really worried about their recovery. And if a farmed salmon gets in and breeds with them, then that whole generation could be, you know, a total mess and they could all die. And then we're back to ground zero trying to save them all. So that is definitely one of the biggest negative impacts of these farms that we're seeing, but we'll get into some other ones as well. I guess the next thing I want to say is about one of the ways that the next stage, so after the embryonic forms are done, they're juvenile fish and they've been sold to another company, the best way to keep these fish alive is to separate them based on similar sizes and age classes. And it's done for a number of benefits. It reduces fish loss through cannibalism because fish eat smaller fish. So if they're not the same size, then you just lose more fish, and that's inefficient productive wise. And also it's just not a great system.
Yeah, it's not good if your livestock starts eating each other.
Exactly. It also improves the efficiency of feeding. So you can kind of calculate better if you have fish of the same size, how much food that you need to fish them, feed them per day, because if you have smaller and larger, you might miscalculate and now you've just lost some food that you didn't need to lose. And then it also reduces the number of fish that get pulled at harvest time that are too small to sell. So what happens generally is if they're not organized based on their size, they'll go to haul up the harvest, and then all the ones that are too tiny will just get thrown away, and it's just a huge waste.
Because probably when they're being fed, the big ones can outcompete them for the food, right? So it's not only are they smaller, but they don't get fed as much food.
Exactly. So that's one way that they're able to make it a bit more sustainable. But now I'm going to go into the last topic that really people, it gets shown in the media the most, and it gets people probably the most upset about farmed fish. And it is the use of therapeutins in fish farming. So therapeutins meaning antibiotics and pesticides.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just using massive amounts of antibiotics. That's danger. That's danger zone. I mean, pesticides too. But antibiotics for resistant purposes. Yeah. Okay. Tell me more.
So that's interesting that you went to do resistance first, because honestly, that's not the main problem that people have with antibiotics being in fish.
What?
Well, so the main, problem, I guess, depending on how you meant it, but the main problem people have with the fish getting antibiotics. So for one, people assume that it's like how they use it with beef, where it's to bulk up the animals for, and like there's no reason to use it. In Canada, a licensed vet has to prescribe an antibiotic, and it has to be because there is a bacteria within the group. It's only ever used to fix the diseases. It's never used just to like fatten the group.
Okay.
Now, I don't know about other countries though, because Canada's health guidelines are quite strong compared to a lot of countries, but that is just to, you know, ease someone's mind out there. It is only used when needed.
Yeah, so then, that's just a canned stat for you.
Yeah. So then the next worry is, of course, you're eating fish that have been fed antibiotics potentially. And a lot of salmon do have that, because there's a lot of issues with diseases in salmon for some reason. They're not totally sure, but it just happens. You know, you got a lot of fish in a small area, it's going to happen. So in Canada as well, each fish that like they have to check the levels within the group of the harvest to make sure that they get very, very low again. I'm not sure if it's to zero. I couldn't actually find a specific number, but I do know that it has to go down before that they're actually allowed to sell them in the market.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, well, I mean, that makes sense. You want to check if your meat's diseased before you eat it.
Exactly. Yes. and so then another thing people are worried about, so the delousing drugs, they can be sensitive to marine life because sea lice actually fall under the same category as crustaceans. So the sea lice that you're trying to kill could also kill any other like crabs or things that are in the area. So that's a big concern from those.
Yeah, because then if one of your fish escapes, that's like twice as dangerous.
I know. And it's hard because, you know, water is a constantly moving medium. It's not like farming on land where if you expose one group, it's stuck in this kind of 2D dimension. It's 3D dimension where the water is coming in and it's coming out and it's mixing with the rest of the environment. Like it's very hard to control. Yeah. And that's why it's so concerning to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But the last positive thing that I do want to mention, kind of like a step forward that we've seen recently, is that we've actually decreased our use of antimicrobials because we've seen effective vaccines being created for fish.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
It started in Norway. They've been creating these vaccines there, and Canada has been very on board on getting them because we like hardly use any microbials now. It's really mostly these vaccines, which is really, really positive news. So now let's get into the very specific types of aquaculture that we can do.
Yes, I love the specifics, as you know.
Yeah. Okay, so Elsa, I'm going to send you your first picture. I'm going to get you to describe exactly what you see.
Alrighty. Okay. So here is the picture. I see a coastline that is very arboreal, a lot of fir trees, and it's next to what I presume is a lake, maybe the ocean. And okay, so there's this little tiny, well, probably not tiny, but there's this little hut on the water, and then there's what looks like a giant, like you know, the antenna on the side of like a satellite. It looks kind of like that, not the antenna, the like arm on the satellite.
Right.
It's like crisscross.
It kind of does look like that.
It looks like a satellite arm, but it's sitting on top of the water. So these little squares of like outlined in what I would guess is like you could walk on it on the like water sidewalks.
Yeah, you're pretty much right.
Yeah, and it looks like there's maybe some nets in the middle of each square.
Yeah. Okay, so this is actually ocean. I know it does kind of look like it could be a lake, but this is actually a coastal ocean area. What you're seeing, each of those little enclosures has a group of fish. And so this is a larger operation. It's got a lot of fish cages going on, but these would have different sized fish in these little squares. Mm-hmm. And then that big green building on the end is actually just filled with food and like things that they need for the fish. So it stays out there with them. So you're not transporting it back and forth. And then someone honestly just comes along with a shovel and starts throwing the food into the different squares of fish. It's not super high tech, but this is called open net pens is basically what it's called. And it's for offshore farming. Yeah. So it's probably the most typical one that people have seen. Sometimes they're seen in rings instead of this type. This is actually quite a big operation, whereas smaller like salmon cages operations, they're in circles.
Okay.
Yeah. The pros of this is that it's quite cost effective. All you really need is this setup of the nets and then the food, and you're pretty much good to go. Of course, you have to follow regulations and stuff, but it's really, really simple for kind of anyone to start, which is why it's good in rural communities, because people might not have necessarily a bunch of money, but they can invest in this and they can see it through.
Okay, so affordable option.
Yeah, it's an affordable option for little areas. But the problem is there's a lot of negatives with this type of fishing because it's open to the ocean. All of their waste products aren't contained within the small pen. So it just comes in and out. And that's part of why it's so cost effective, because the ocean filters the waste for you. Like the tides come in and the tides come out and it takes away waste. So it's low cost, but you have so many fish in an area that never hosted that many fish before. It can't keep up with the amount of waste. And eventually the area is going to have a lot of ammonia.
Oh, and that's not good.
No, it's not good. It can be very, very toxic, actually. It's a huge detriment to the natural environment because you have added so much concentrated waste that the environment's unable to support it. And it's basically untreated sewage. So it can really take a toll on the area. And I've seen it firsthand. Like I've seen it happen off of Graham and Anne, which is where my mom is from. It's a little island and they have salmon cages. And it was going really well. They kind of started doing salmon cages right at the beginning of it becoming popular, and there wasn't a lot of research on it. And what happened was the areas weren't able to sustain it. And eventually we started seeing these toxic blooms of algae.
Oh, no.
So algae loves nitrogen, and of course it does. It's something that other animals can't get rid of, but algae and seaweed and those species love it. And so that causes a lot of those species to grow there. So the environment's overly enriched with minerals and nutrients, and that's the eutrophication. And then when the algae blooms grow and all of this happens, it depletes the oxygen available to the fish.
Yeah, because the algae is like oxygen starving, so it takes up all those resources that otherwise would go to the fish.
Yeah. And so what happened was some of the fish started to die because they weren't getting enough oxygen.
So they're resuscitated by this algae growth.
Yeah. And it's such a cyclical thing. Like, and that's the worry about this type of farming, is that you cause one difference to this natural environment, the rest of everything else will try and compensate for it, and eventually it won't be able to compensate anymore, and something is going to suffer the consequences.
Okay. Yeah. So if it causes, how do we minimize those changes?
That is a very exciting thing that I'm going to bring up at the end. I'm going to keep it under my belt for now, because it really, realistically, keeping this exact system, there isn't really a way to minimize the consequences. What they're doing now is they move the cages every couple months. So off of Grand Manan, you've got your cages in one beach for a while, and then you move it to another beach and allow the environment to fix itself again, which the ocean is incredible at fixing itself. It's honestly, like, it's the coolest thing to see it recover from what we've done to it. And it does it at remarkable speed.
Yeah. Yeah. Nature wants to find a way to adapt.
Yeah, exactly. And so we just move and then we come back, and it's not sustainable. It's not the solution, but it's been working for the time being.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So temporary fix. It's the band-aid that gives us time to figure out a real solution.
Right. So then the other concerns are salmon cages or any fish cages like this, open pen nets. They attract parasites. It's the warmth of the area. It's the amount of fish. It just attracts parasites. There's nothing else about it. So we're seeing sea lice.
Yeah, it's like a buffet.
Sea lice is a huge struggle for Atlantic salmon farmers. It's what they spend all of their money trying to fix. And so, but this is kind of an interesting fact, is that 75% of wild salmon, so salmon not even to do with farms, are estimated to have herring worms in them. 75% already have herring worms.
Okay. So, and then you give them like a breeding ground, and that number's just going to soar through the roof.
For sure. But it's actually quite gross to think about that. Like, 75% of any wild salmon out there has worms in it.
Yeah, this is one of those moments where I'm like, I'm a vegetarian, I don't have to deal with that.
That's true. I don't like salmon anyway. But so just anyone who really likes sushi out there and likes making homemade sushi, this is something that I really think you should take to heart. If you're going to be eating raw salmon, you need to be freezing it at negative 20 degrees Celsius for at least a week to kill any parasites, because that's something that they're seeing a lot. People think it's better to go and buy fresh salmon from a grocery store because it's going to be better than you could get, you know, at a restaurant or something. And it's a huge concern.
So it's, yeah. So you have to watch out for all fish everywhere. See, all I knew it. Those little sneaky fish.
Yeah. I mean, it's like that with anything you're going to eat raw though. Like, be careful.
Not my broccoli.
I mean, you have to worry about like E. coli and stuff.
Yeah, but not as much as salmon.
Okay, fair. Okay, are you ready for your next picture, Elsa?
I'm ready for my next picture. Oh, okay. Okay, so this is a close-up shot of what I'm assuming those nets look like, but closer up. And you can see that, like, maybe four little squares in a row with these long poles or something going down into them, and this box in front of each square, which I assume holds some sort of food or something. And literally the water is, like, the other is like, churning with fish. Like, I couldn't point one out specifically, but, like, the top of each one of these squares is just like teeming. You can see the amount of fish that are in there.
Yes, you are correct. This is inland farming. So this isn't a pond. This is what people are doing. Inland areas that aren't connected to the ocean. And so again, this is a positive for some communities. Somewhat of a response to the problems of open pens, right? Like what we just saw, because it isn't open to the ocean. There's no worry of these ocean parasites. They can't come along and infiltrate the group. They're toxic, you know, their excretions, they're not going into the rest of the ocean. And there's no chance of their genetics making it into the wild population. Like, there's a lot of benefits to doing like a pond farming kind of situation.
Okay, that I have a question. If it is inland, is the water still salt water? Like, how does that, where do they find these? saltwater ponds.
This isn't saltwater. So they've specifically chosen a fish that live in, like, trout or that type of thing that live in freshwater to begin with for this type of fish farming. You can't get the same type of fish in both areas. It's a response to the open pen farming in a sense, but not based on, like, the type of fish, just based on, you know, the problems we see.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
So change species, but same idea.
Yeah, exactly. This version of fish farming became really, really popular in countries with little access to the ocean. So the most common species are tilapia and shrimp. So they're able to produce food for locals that has high nutrition value without having to import, and it creates jobs where there previously weren't any. There's positives on an economic level, basically, with this area. But the impact on the environment is quite bad.
Oh no, not again.
Like we've seen some good stuff where the ocean, you know, we can't control it, but now we see some bad stuff.
I thought we saved the oceans. I thought that's what we were doing.
Well, we technically saved the oceans, but we've just hurt another part of the environment.
Oh god damn it, humans.
Yeah. Okay. The main problem is the waste products. And of course it's the waste products because you have less water. It's stagnant. It's not being moved.
Oh, so they're just sitting in their own filth.
They're sitting in their own filth for quite a bit of it. Yeah. They do have certain filtration, and I watched a video on it and it was very confusing. They have a filtration system. Like basically to do this, you have to like drain a pond and then like get certain cracks in the mud below so that it has like more filtration, and then you fill the pond again and you have tubing, and like it's a huge system.
Yeah,
and
that must be an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, it totally is. And so what they do for some of the waste product is it can actually be collected and sold to land farmers to help compost and grow their own crops. They're able to do that to some extent, but again, the ammonia is the biggest problem, and it soaks into the ground and can ultimately destroy the habitat surrounding the pond.
For our gentle viewers, ammonia, its main chemical component is nitrogen, and the nitrogen is very, very important for like a lot, especially plant growth. And the nitrogen cycle, it's like nitrogen is one of the hardest things to get into the soil. So it's very like, certain plants thrive on it, other plants rely on those plants. Like it's a very careful equilibrium. So since it's one of the rarest materials, if you just flood soil with nitrogen, that is going to affect a lot of different species.
And it's also not just nitrogen. Nitrogen on its own as an isolated product is great, but nitrogen in the formation of ammonia, like it's a toxic chemical. It's something that, you know, we have to be really, really careful with. It's a, so when you're getting huge quantities of that and it's not being broken down into its nitrogen form, it's not really as useful as it would be if it was just nitrogen. Okay. Are you ready for your next one? That's all we're going to spend on pond farming because it's not that interesting, but it's kind of cool.
Okay. Hit me with the next one.
Okay. There we go.
What do we have? Oh, okay. Okay. So this one is completely indoors. It looks like maybe the size of like a high school gym, although I could be wrong. It's got that same kind of pen system going on with little squares and like platform scaffolding to kind of walk above it. But it looks more like a huge indoor pool.
That is very, very, very good description of it. So this is inland farming. This is the solution to not having ponds, to not having the ocean. Like this is probably the cleanest way to do it, but it is very, very expensive.
Because you have to build this whole enclosure, right?
Yeah, so you're building this huge building. It had like the amount of water of 3 Olympic swimming pools. Like it's massive. And that's kind of where the operations are going. Like if they're going to be doing inland farming like this, they really, really want to have huge operations to make it worthwhile. Because if you could hold more fish, then you're going to be able to make more money.
Yeah, and if you're investing this much money into something, you can't just come out with only enough fish to feed, like, your neighborhood, you know? You have to have enough to make it profitable, I'd imagine.
Yeah, exactly. And so other costs come from, they disinfect the water with ultraviolet and filter the water of ammonia, so and turn it into nitrate, which is safe. A bit of oxygen is added to the water every cycle.
So they don't suffocate.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of good reasons to do this type, but it has its own problems, because the reason the main concern that I have for it and why I don't see it as a good option, even though like it's technically the most environmentally friendly, it's not a solution because we're looking to aquaculture to fill the void of food production that we need because we are running out of farmland.
Yeah.
And yet these people are building giant facilities on land to hold fish.
Yeah, so you're winding up with the same problem. You're not going to be able to produce as much fish on that land because you have to buy all this equipment in order to farm them.
Yeah, if we're running out of farmland, how do we have room for a giant building as well? Like, it's not a solution when ocean covers 71% of Earth's surface. Why are we trying to bring fish into, you know, the 29% we have left?
Yeah, so we're just giving ourselves more problems to solve instead of trying to solve the environmental ones that we currently have.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is great. Doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, okay. And just to be clear, so these are not, like, the incubators, right? All of the pictures you've shown me and all of the, like, stuff we're talking about, that's when they're already juvenile fish. They get sent to grow here.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. This type of facility is definitely for bigger fish. These ones are probably on the smaller end, and they probably is like another part of the building that has bigger tanks than this. And often they're found in like ring shapes so that the fish can swim in circles.
Oh,
yeah, it's really
cute,
actually.
They have a place to go.
Well, they never know where they're going, but
no, because the fish.
Yeah, but it's healthier for them, right? They're actually moving in currents and systems that make sense to them.
And they're not just like stuck in this tiny little they can actually like use their bodies to move.
Yeah, like the pond farming, that one really freaks me out. I don't like that one at all.
It's too much.
Yeah, so an economic problem, which is, I know it's not really the concern for most scientists are economic problems, but it is something that could really cripple coastal communities if this is where fish farming went to. Because the great part about those other ones is that they're small. It doesn't have a huge startup cost. You can kind of just go at it and eventually grow your business as you make a little money. And it stays near rural communities that need jobs.
Yeah, because a lot of those coastal cities have been built around this one industry. So if you take that industry away, like overnight, basically, you're going to have a whole bunch of small towns that can no longer provide for themselves.
Exactly. And so you're taking this giant facility, probably to a bigger town, not a huge town or something, but like the island of Gramenan, where my mom is from, it would not have enough room to have a giant facility like this on that island. There'd be no space for it. So if one opened up, say, in Maine, and all of the fish ended up going there, and we stopped funding, you know, fishermen who are fishing in the ocean, that entire island would be out of work.
Yeah, which is not ideal, because we're trying to move fishing to, like, replace the jobs of the people who are already fishing.
Yeah.
Exactly. I know that was a weird sentence to say, but you know what I mean.
It was a weird sentence, but yes, I follow.
Hopefully our gentle viewers do, too.
Yeah, I know. And then another problem of it is that there's a lot more room for human error, because everything is an artificial situation. There's artificial filtration, there's artificial cleaning. Everything depends on a human doing their job properly.
Oh my gosh, that is the worst thing to depend on, Quincy.
I know, right? It really is. Like, if you just have a net of fish out in the ocean, the ocean's gonna figure it out.
Yeah, right? Like, the ocean is like, I know how to grow fish.
Exactly. But you let someone be in charge of, like, whether or not these fish are going to have a clean tank. Like, I don't trust it.
But Quincy, we're land creatures.
It's true.
We know about land and air, not about water.
I know. Okay, so now we've reached my absolute favorite thing about aquaculture that I learned a lot of in my class.
Okay.
So I don't know if I should tell you what it is for first, or if I should, I'm going to show you the picture first, because I wonder if you'll understand what it is trying to say.
Okay. I will try my best to describe.
Okay. Here we go.
Okay. All right. Okay.
There's a lot going on.
This is a drawn diagram. And it's the perspective is we're on the ocean floor and we're looking at this big net in the shape of a cylinder that has like subsections to it. Mm-hmm. And then the net goes to the top of the water, and you can see that like at the top of the water there's like an opening. It's like the open nets that we were looking at before. But underwater there's a lot more going on. So there's this like cylindrical container, and then underneath that there's another cylindrical container that looks like the big one has fish and the one underneath it has crustaceans. I'd imagine some bottom type feeders. And then beside the bottom cylinder, it kind of looks like a petri dish, but like huge, are these tanks, like kind of like fish tanks. They look like fish tanks. And then each one looks like it has a little different diagram of a different species in it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and okay. Then what are those hanging things?
I know, there's so much going on in this picture.
Oh my god. Okay, Quincy, take over. There's a lot.
I know. I feel like this was the best way to do it, though, because I loved you trying to figure out what is going on.
On either side, there are these, like, curtains of seaweed and clam hangings. It's, okay, tell me what's happening here.
So this is called integrated multitrophic aquaculture.
Oh.
Yeah. So, basically, Elsa, why don't you tell me what you think a natural environment needs to support a fish's life? So specifically, what helps keep them alive and clean up after them?
Well, it's a whole bunch of different organisms, right? Like you have, that's why in a lake and stuff like that, you have like bottom feeders who will eat the stuff off the bottom and kind of clean up the bottom of whatever body of water you have. And then you need a variety of species because they're each going to fit into their own environmental niche and kind of use those resources and input other resources. Like an ecosystem works together, if that makes sense. I know I'm getting broader and broader here, so I'll try to focus.
This is exactly what I wanted. So
excellent. Yeah.
So basically, though, to break it down, what a fish needs dissolved oxygen to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
It needs food. It needs something to clean up its waste, its ammonium.
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing its mom doesn't count. I'm kidding. You should not make your mom clean up after you. That's not what moms are for.
If they could, they would, but I don't think there's any possible way their moms could help out in this situation.
Oh man. Just picturing little fish moms.
Yeah. And then they need something to clean up their organic particles, so like the digested food and basically their poop.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this is what needs to happen within an environment. And what we noticed with the very first open pen net fishing that I showed you is that the environment would support it for a certain amount of time, but mm-hmm. then it wouldn't be able to keep up. It would be too much. It was too concentrated. So the solution is to concentrate the things that are also helping clean up.
Okay.
So what we're seeing here, you have your fish in a normal pen net. Nothing's changed with that, really. But mm-hmm. below it, you have your lobster or sea cucumbers or bivalves. The bivalves are what are on those chains on the side.
Okay.
And they ingest organic particles. That's their food. They eat that. So now you're farming lobster and sea mm-hmm. cucumbers and bivalves or clams or whatever. And mm-hmm. you can also take their production. You can sell your clams. You can sell your lobster.
Okay. So by increasing your biodiversity, you actually have a healthier environment for all involved.
Exactly.
And you have larger output.
Yeah. And so then you've got your seaweed growing on the side there because it's going to take the ammonium. It's going to use the nitrogen and it's going to grow. And now you're going to have a really, really healthy production of seaweed, which you will also sell.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's taking the environment, finding the things that help clean up after each other, and then harvesting all of it for sales, basically.
Okay, this seems like the best option. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this seems like great.
It is 100% the absolute best option for aquaculture.
Yeah. You know what? Okay, so we have this family friend, and he is the first person who's made me mildly not detest fish, and it's because he has this, like, huge fish tank, and he was talking about how, like, it's not that he has pet fish, it's that he has this, like, pet ecosystem. So his fish tank, and he says people who are, like, actually into fish tanks and stuff, not just, like, a goldfish in a bowl, what really, like, gets them going is they have to combine the right number of the right types of vegetation with the right types of fish.
And, right.
Like, you can't just put anything in the tank. Either one breed will kill the other, or there won't be enough of a certain resource, and so they'll all die or something like that. And so he says what's really the point of, like, taking care of fish is taking care of environments and ecosystems. So that looks like this, but just farming it is on just a much bigger scale, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically combining appropriate proportions of fed aquaculture species, so fin fish and and shrimp and lobster and those types of things, with inorganic extractive aquaculture species, so seaweed, and then the organic aquaculture species, extractive aquaculture species as well, so the shellfish or the herbivorous fish. It's always so hard to say that word. But yeah, so you're creating a balanced ecosystem management approach.
I like this. This is kind of like a new take on farming. Instead of, like, specializing, you're expanding.
Yeah. And it's part of, again, thinking about the water as a 3D medium. Like, on land, there's only so much you can do. Like, mm-hmm. You need to water your plants. You need to, like, and that water will drain off. And, like, there's drain off is bad, and there's nothing you can really do about it because there's nothing that thrives on drain off. But in the water, there's so many different species that all have to do something with each other because they all live in the exact same environment.
Yeah, it's just like the dirt.
Yeah,
it's like when you're growing plants, the dirt has all of these, like, bugs and worms and, like, these different, like, nutrients and stuff like that, and you don't really have to manage it because, like, you know, people use pesticides and it throws off the chemical equilibrium. But in the ocean, you kind of have to be more conscious about recreating that.
Yeah. Every species has its own niche, and that is what it's called, a niche, where it's basically just where they fit into the situation and where they thrive. And they've all picked up a special spot within, it's like almost like a production, like a theater production, where, like, you've got your, like, main cast, but then, like, the people on the side, like, waiting, like, for their big moment, which is, like, just, like, they go on and they say, like, what do you mean?
Yeah, but if they didn't do it,
yeah, the story couldn't move forward, right?
Yeah. Okay, I love this. We got the main roles, we got the extras, we got the side characters, the BFFs. I like it.
So this is the future of aquaculture, but the problem is
No,
it's not a problem with the actual idea. The problem is that no one is interested in researching it. It's a very new topic, which is so funny because it seems so obvious. Like, you think about the process and you're like, well, of course, if you're going to put extra fish, you should put extra seaweed and you should put extra, like, it makes sense, but it is a very new way of thinking because for the longest time, all we did was go out and caught fish on boats. And then when we were starting to not have enough fish from that, we're like, okay, well, maybe we should put fish in some cages and grow them that way and have them available. Like, we've never been forced to think about it, so we've never progressed past it.
That is honestly such a mood. We've never been forced to think about it, so we never bothered to get past these other problematic methods. Exactly. Like, that is a mood and a half. Oh, my Lord.
It's so true in so many different parts of life. Like, we just go along with the same ideas, and even though it's not the best thing to do, we just keep doing it because it hasn't affected us yet.
Yeah, I feel like more and more people are trying to, like, mold the earth to suit our needs. And more we're kind of realizing that we have to work together with our environment and that fighting our environment is not going to work out for us because we live in that environment.
Exactly. And so, like, one thing my professor, I remember him saying, was, like, they are trying to convince salmon farmers, especially, to invest in this research because this could fix so many of salmon farmers' struggles. Mm-hmm. But they're too focused on trying to solve sea lice. Like, that is their number one concern, and that is where they're investing their money. And so we are unable to move forward with this integrated aquaculture system because they've got their heads in the sand. They can't see past the current day when this isn't going to sustain them, and it won't sustain anyone. And eventually the environment, like, it helps as much as we can, but eventually we'll push too much out there and there won't be enough to fix it. And it's just not, it's not stable. And yeah, this is a stable option that we just need to invest more time in.
Well, and also we're discovering, like, I again and again, like with different crops and stuff like that, is that if you only grow one species of, like, banana, or you only grow one type, like, it eventually it's going to stop working. Like, that's why we've learned that, okay, we have to switch our crops from field to field so that the soil doesn't lose all, like, one particular nutrient and stuff like that.
Right.
And the longer you stay in that kind of tunnel vision of, let's try to make this one thing work, and the longer you try to, like, put band-aids on that problem, it's just gonna keep happening. Like, if you fix the lice, something else is going to happen that, like, yeah, you're right. It really is kind of like that short-term thinking.
Yeah, it is. It is. All of this is about short-term thinking. Every step we've ever made in aquaculture, in fishing industry in general, has been short-term thinking. Even, like, driving a car and the use of gas and lead in gas for years, like, we weren't thinking about the future, and that has always been our problem, and eventually we need to learn from that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so
we need more diversity. Okay, continue.
No, so really, that is pretty much what I have on it. I mean, there's so much more that I could go into, but I just wanted to give a general basis. I mean, one of the things that I think about is how our population keeps growing and our food sources don't seem to keep growing. We don't have more options coming in without destroying the natural environment around us. And so I think a really important thing we need to think about is, if our population is going to keep growing, where are we going to get our food? And how are we going to sustain our environment at the same time?
Yeah. You know, it makes me think more and more we're kind of moving away from this, like, one large corporation to, like, more appreciating, like, small businesses and stuff like that. And, like, I know we were talking about in another episode how, like, everything keeps repeating itself. And, like, I'm thinking about now this, like, fishing industry and how instead of focusing on it like a conglomerate, like, okay, this one area is going to get all the fish, we need to start, like, small businessing everything, you know, like, have a lot of different areas with a lot more biodiversity and just kind of doing it on maybe a smaller scale but more often.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, integrated multi-trophic aquaculture, like, that is a more, it's a higher level, like, it's a of production for sure, because you're not only doing the fish, but you're doing all of the other things at the same time. And it's more sustainable, but it is for larger production areas. Like, what I like about, like, the inland farming, pond farming, I mean, is that it does help little communities who are nowhere near the ocean, you know, like, there are so many areas that they have to import all of their food. They don't have their own production of food. And so that is a solution for small areas, but it's not environmentally friendly and it's not a full-on solution. Whereas integrated multi-trophic aquaculture systems, they're a solution to open pen net farming, but they're not a solution to all of the problems.
All right. So we got to keep researching. We got to keep looking into this.
Yeah. I think it's a good example of people looking ahead of the times and where we are and finally looking to something that is more sustainable. Yeah. And I think the same thing needs to be done for areas that live nowhere near water or areas that have a tough time growing crops. Like, we need to keep thinking about the future and not just focusing on where we are now.
More tiny ecosystems, less.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, Elsa, so what is your takeaway from this podcast?
Okay, my takeaway is that aquaculture, one, it's a lot more complicated than just growing stuff in water. especially because what we're learning more and more is you can't just pick one thing and grow it, is that you have to have a little bit more balance, and that the hardest part about growing things in water is that you produce a lot of one type of waste, and you can kind of ruin the environment you're in with these either semi-invasive species of like homegrown fish getting out into the wild, or like their waste gets into the ocean and kind of saturates certain areas, which will kill off other species. So my takeaway is that there are four main types of aquaculture. There's the open nets in the ocean, there's the open nets in the ponds, and then there's the inland, which are those completely man-made kind of gymnasium sized and then the final one, which I like so much, which is basically you build yourself an ecosystem. All of these have, most of them have a lot of harsh environmental effects that we're kind of short-sightedly trying to fix one by one instead of trying to fix the system that made all these problems, which classic humanity. But that they all are suitable for these different environments, and that maybe there's not just one solution going forward, but depending on the region you're in, to like adapt these different methods to those regions and to like see what we need in what spot and kind of work on a more localized basis. Less like, this is how we will do it all around the world, and more like, okay, this is what this system needs. This is what that system needs.
Very true, yeah. I think my takeaway from this subject in general, from what I did in class and this research that I've done recently, is that the environment just requires balance, and everything in life requires balance. You know, if you work really hard, you also need time to relax, or else you'll go towards a mental break. Like, everything in life requires balance, and to assume that you can change something in the environment without repercussions to the rest of the environment is absolutely crazy. So we need to be thinking in an integrated kind of way, not just about our aquaculture, but in everything. How could what we are doing affect everything else around us? And I think that's the approach that we really need to take towards the environment in general.
Yeah, Quincy, I love that the more I learn about almost any subject, the more I find these like patterns in the rest of, like, I think all fields can help us understand other fields. That's, I think that's one of the reasons that like this podcast is for, like, people who maybe are interested in this kind of stuff but don't know anything about it. Just the nerds who just want to learn more about the world, because honestly, everything's connected.
Everything is connected. I feel like, and that excites me. Like, I know that we're talking about it almost in like a watch what you do, because you could ruin something because everything's connected. But what I love, what I love most about learning in science is that we can, these patterns that you just talked about, like, everything is connected, and that's so special and unique. And to know that you are connected to everything else around you is just, it's a really amazing thing. And we need to appreciate our fortune to be able to be in the position that we are in as humans and give back to the environment.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think so much, I want to do an episode later on animal behavior, because I think so much humans have kind of separated ourselves and been like, we are above animalistic instincts. And like, every time like we figure out that like, oh my God, bears talk to each other and have their own language. Like, obviously they do. Like, obviously organisms communicate. And like, yeah, I think we're going to just find out more and more and more that we are part of an environment. We are a piece of an environment, and that we affect it and it affects us. Everything is connected. That is what we leave you with today.
Yes, that is what we leave you with. And I hope you have, well, actually, I don't know if this will be out before Christmas or not. It might be released on Christmas, actually.
Oh, yeah. The 24th is Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so this will be released right before Christmas. So Merry Christmas, everyone.
Our Christmas present to you. Or happy holidays,
happy
whatever you celebrate.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Happy winter, if you're a solstice worshiper.
Yeah.
Just... This is a time of good cheer, and I feel like especially this year, just a time to just put out good thoughts and good feelings and apparently learn about fish.
Yeah, and appreciate how connected we are even when we can't see each other.
Aw, I think that's the perfect note to end on. Thank you for coming, gentle viewers.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening.